The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Nancy Spain, Dillis Powell, Dennis Norton, and Frank Miller. And we go straight into round one to test their vocabularies. 2 marks if they get the meaning of the following words approximately right. Beginning with Dillis Powell. Dillis, what is a coven? C-O-V-E-N.
It's a meeting of witches.
Quite right, an assembly of witches. Oddly enough, it comes from the same root as the word that produces convent, but those are much nicer girls. Dennis Norton, what is a wanderoo? W-A-N-D-E-R-O-O, wanderoo.
A wanderoo. Well, it's what happens, Jack, when somebody loves you. There's a song that goes, I remember, somebody loves me, a wanderoo.
It's Australian.
Yes, a wanderoo it can be. I tell you what it could be. It could be a kangaroo that has fallen out the pouch and is just going around looking for its mum. It's called
a
wanderoo.
If it had fallen out and fallen upwards and landed in a tree, it would be nearer the real meaning.
It would only fall upwards if its mummy had hiccups.
Dennis, I'm going to give you one for the magnificent bit of song. It is, in fact, an animal, but it's a kind of monkey, a monkey that lives in Ceylon. Yeah. Nancy Spade, what is a piker? P-I-K-E-R, piker.
Somebody who's trying to get out of paying their debts.
Not quite, I think, Nancy. Well, what do you do to start with before you make the debt? No.
Well, you have to gamble.
Yes, that's more like it.
Well, what other debts do you have?
1.5, I think. A chap who is a poor sport, which is the impression that Nancy conveyed, but it's an overcautious gambler who is terribly worried the whole time he's going to lose. Frank Muir, the word is aloetic. A-L-O-D-T-I-C, aloetic.
Good, I thought it was going to get a difficult one.
Aloetic.
Tic means appertaining to, doesn't it? Having the qualities of.
Yes, we've got it. If we go
poetic means being like Edgar Allan Poe. Aloetic. Aloetic.
Yes,
means, it means...
Put it in the plural.
Aloetics. Hello. Hello. Who's your lady friend? somebody who welcomes... What? Hang on.
Allos.
Yes.
Oh, bitte. Bitte, danke. it's appertaining to aloes.
You're absolutely right. You've got there in the end. It's to do with aloes. It might be a medicine containing aloes, which is a strong purgative drug. Well, before we start round two, I'm going to give each team a quotation for them to write down, and I want the 2 women members of the team to study their quotations, and then at the end of the program I shall ask them where those quotations come from. Nancy Spain and Dennis Norton, your quotation is, "Are you sick or are you sullen?" And Dillis Bauer with Frank Muir, yours is, "It takes a great deal of history to produce a little literature." And at the end of the program I shall ask Dennis and Frank to give me their ideas of how these words came to be said or written. The next round is about verse and poetry, and in this round I give each member of the team a quotation and ask them for the following line or lines to complete it. 2 marks if they can complete the quotation, and 2 more for naming its source. Lewis Powell, "I hold it true, whate'er before, I feel it when I sorrow most."
Tennyson.
Yes, Tennyson.
It's that one about
Loving and losing.
Yes.
It's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all.
Quite right. Absolutely right. Do you remember the poem? Doesn't matter.
But don't bother them.
In memoriam.
In memoriam. Well done, Dennis. 4 marks. Well done. Now, Dennis Norden. A damsel with a dulcimer in a vision once I saw.
Kubla Khan.
Yes.
Coleridge. Damsel with a dulcimer in a vision once I saw.
It was
an Abyssinian maid, and on her dulcimer she played Somebody Loves Me. A Wonderoo. That was the origin of a Wonderoo.
Well done, Dennis. 4 marks. But what she was actually singing about was Mount Abora. A damsel with a dulcimer in a vision once I saw. It was an Abyssinian maid. On her dulcimer she played singing of Mount Abora. Nancy Spade. The grave's a fine and private place, but none, I think, do there embrace.
Well, this is Andrew Marvel.
Andrew Marvel.
Finishes up about what fun it is to sport.
Mm. Yes. Mm.
And about the hot breath of time on his shoulders.
Yes, chariot.
Time's winged chariot.
Time's winged chariot, hurrying near.
2 marks, I think, Nancy. Andrew Marvel to his coy mistress. The grave's a fine and private place, but none, I think, do there embrace. Now, therefore, while the youthful hue sits on thy skin like morning dew, and while thy willing soul transpires at every pore with instant fires, now let us sport us while we may. And there's Time's Winged Chariot a bit later. Frank Moore, fear no more the lightning flash, nor the all-dreaded thunderstone.
Fear no more the lightning flash, nor the dreaded thunderstone. It's ancient.
Yes.
Thunderstone. Pre-Shakespeare.
Yes. No, it's not pre-Shakespeare.
Oh, it's Shakespeare, Jack. Golden lads and lasses must what?
Like something of a come to dust.
Make sport.
Thou thy something work.
Yes.
As hath done. Something I've gone and paid thy wages.
Thou art gone and
paid
thy
wages.
Go on, I've had no idea. No. I thought it was Easy Joan doth keel the poat.
2 marks already for knowing it was Shakespeare. I don't think you're going to get much further over the next lines. 2.5, perhaps, for knowing about the golden lads and girls all must, like chimney sweepers come to dust. It's Fidelis Dirge in Cymbeline, Shakespeare. Fear no more the lightning flash, nor the all-dreaded thunderstone. Fear not slander, censure rash. Thou hast finished joy and moan. All lovers young, all lovers must consign to thee and come to dust.
Very good. Good thought.
Well, the next round is origins and derivations, and I've got to try and use my discretion to mark these up to a maximum of 3. What it means now and what the origin is. Dillis Powell, the phrase, to sail under false colours.
It means now to pretend to be somebody you're not.
Yes.
Well, it must have been... It's a nautical expression.
Mm-hmm.
And you must have run up the wrong flag.
In order?
In order to deceive the enemy.
Yes, fair enough. That's 3 marks. It means nowadays to try and attain your object by appearing to be quite other than you are. And if you ran up the wrong flag, particularly if you were a pirate, people might be unsuspecting and let you get far too close, and then it was all over.
Captain. Actually, it's ran the wrong flag up rather than ran up the flag.
Yes,
I that's clear in our minds.
I accept the correction, Frank. So would Captain Hornblower. Dennis Norden. Grand Guignol.
Well, that's an entertainment that's very bloody and gory. And it comes from the French.
Yes.
He no fool, this lad. I wonder, Guignol is the sort of Punch and Judy show.
Yes.
That they have in the Champs-Élysées.
That's all right.
But this is bigger.
And Grand Guignol is a big punch.
Yes, I think you'll get your 3, Dennis. Nowadays, a series of plays sensational, gruesome, and so on. And as Dennis Cartwright has said, Guignol, which was the name of a theatre in Paris, Grand Guignol, was the principal character in the French puppet show, very like our Punch and Judy, in the 18th century. Three marks. Nancy Spain, a lampoon.
A lampoon? Well, mm-hmm. It's one of these dreary satires
mm-hmm.
where you take the energy from somebody and transmogrify it, you know,
mm-hmm.
parasitical stuff.
Yeah.
And
comes from?
I suppose that it's been going on for years, really. Rowlandson, people like that.
Yeah.
18th century.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose you'd have a poon, like the boys make, you know, a good poon. And then you'd have a lame poon, you know, like you and I make, Jack.
Oh, I think 1.5 for mixture of knowledge and effrontery. A bit of sarcastic personal satire. It probably comes from French lampon, let us drink or guzzle, as part of the refrain of a 17th century French drinking song.
Mm. Probably does.
A la lampon.
A la lampon.
One lampon, two.
Thank you. The expression washout
means a flop, a failure.
Yeah.
Washout. It's midsummer test matches at Old Trafford. It means when things are washed out by moisture.
Mm.
Therefore, the whole thing's a failure.
And apart from test matches, you're very nearly there, Frank. What else might get washed out or away?
Wash out? Sea.
It takes a lot of doing.
Yeah. Oh, it's a nautical expression, Jack. Chance would have it. And it comes from when they're doing their dobying on the aft deck and there's a following sea, then very often the vests are carried overboard and that was called a washout. When the washing is washed
one,
out.
One, I think.
What's your story?
Well, as you said, Frank, it means a complete failure or fiasco. And
I didn't say
if
that.
It says washout... means disregard the order that's been given. But there are two explanations which you can take a pick among.
The sweet is mine.
One is a break in a railway line or a road track caused by flood or downpour, as Frank suggested. The other is that it's naval slang. When you wrote down a signal message, you put it down on a slate, and in order to wait for the next message, you washed out the message that was already there.
Why didn't they write on paper?
Well, they're jolly hard to hold in a stiff wind. The next round's about foreign phrases which are used in English books and sometimes, perhaps more rarely, in conversation. And I want to know what they mean. De l'espoir à outrance. A with a grave accent. O-U-T-R-A-N-C-E, outrance.
Our front door.
It means two extremes, I think, doesn't it?
Yes, and you fight.
As far as you can do it.
Yes, you fight two.
Well, I think you're dead.
Yes, that's just what I wanted. You fight to the death. Our outrance is to the death. Too much. Dennis Norden, ballon d'essai. D'essai. Ballon d'essai.
It's sort of try it on the dog. It's sort of an experiment.
That's good enough. It's a trial balloon, literally. Mm. Experiment to see whether the public will tolerate a new policy or another nation or state will tolerate what you're up to. You try it out. Too much. Nancy Spain, coup de main. C-O-U-P-D-E-M-A-I-N. Coup de main.
Blow with the hand or fist?
I suppose originally, yes.
A sharp slap in the face? A punch up?
You've missed out one ingredient, which is important, Nancy.
Garlic.
Well, I like garlic.
1.5. The point is, it's sudden. It's not only a vigorous attack, but a sudden vigorous attack. Thank you. Femme de chambre.
Oh, the wife of Mr. Chamber. And then they had words, and we put them into a dictionary. and it now means the chambermaid.
Chambermaid or lady's maid, it does. 2 marks. And now we come to the last round and go back to those quotations I gave the two teams earlier on in the program. 2 marks, Nancy Spain. Can you give me the origin of your quotation? Are you sick or are you sullen?
Well, this is Johnson.
Yes, you're quite right.
Old Boswell, there, he'd gone into a decline. And Johnson wrote to him and he said, are you sick or are you sullen?
Well done, Nancy.
Boswell query.
Well done, Nancy.
Unquote.
Absolutely right. It's a letter to Boswell written by Dr. Johnson on the 3rd of November, 1784. 2 marks. Dennis Powell, the origin of your quotation, which was, it takes a great deal of history to produce a little literature.
Said by a very literary character.
Yes, really.
Henry James.
Well done. Henry James is Life of Nathaniel Hawthorne. And that's what he said. 2 marks. And now I shall ask Dennis and Frank to tell me their explanation of how these quotations came into being. And on this occasion, the marks will go to whichever incredible explanation receives the longer amount of applause from the audience here in the theatre. So, back to Dennis Norden with his quotation, are you sick or are you sullen?
Well, we've been doing this programme for years now, and it's always announced as an incredible story, and I've never really had a quotation that fitted something that really happened to me, but this did. My word of honour, this is absolutely true. I was in the RAF, and we were in Germany, and the war in Europe was over, and I was at that time attached to sort of an entertainment unit which produced shows for the troops for morale, and we were asked to do what was virtually a sort of command performance in Denmark. And I was in a group. In this group was a couple of people who have since become very well known on television. One is a chap called Bill Fraser. Another one, whose name I promised not to mention, but his wife's name is Mrs. Eric Sykes. And we went over the border into Denmark to do the show at a place called Aarhus, which isn't very far up. And we stopped there for a meal, for lunch. Now, you have to remember that this time there was rationing in England, and we went into the dining room and got served this incredible meal of things that we hadn't seen. And we ate practically silently. It was such an experience. And there was smoked salmon, and there was all kinds of marvelous fish and white bread and things like that. And it came to the end of the meal, and the chap came around with a sweet trolley, and we'd eaten so much, we'd made such pigs of ourselves, we didn't have any room for it. And Bill Fraser, who was in charge of us, said, no, we won't have anything else, thanks. And suddenly we spotted on the sweet trolley this silver tureen which was full of cream. Now, cream during the war was the one thing you never saw. That disappeared practically when they bombed that rabbit at the beginning of the war. Cream went, you know. And there was this thick white cream. And he called the chap back and he said, wait a minute, he said, we'll just have the cream. And this fellow ladled out onto each plate a great mound of just cream, and it was a sight to see, and we just couldn't for the moment bring ourselves to touch it. It was so strange. And Bill Fraser suddenly said, gentlemen, he said, this is not to eat, he said, it's for the grand gesture, he said, and I ask you to follow me. And he stood up, and we all stood up with him, and he put his hand under the plate, and he sploshed it into his face, and we all did the same. And we sat down again. Now, there wasn't one word of comment from any of the Danes who must have thought it was a kind of strange English custom that you do at the end of the meal. And it was a very satisfying gesture, but nevertheless, we didn't get any cream, you see. So we wiped our faces off and then asked the waiter to come back, and we had the whole thing again. He gave us all a plate of cream, which we ate. And we had to do the show that night, and we were as sick as dogs. I can't tell you how ill we all were. That was in Aarhus in 1945, and it was sort of my war story ever since, and I bored people with it, particularly my own family, who've had to listen to it about 50 times whenever anybody's present and somebody, they come round with the cream, and I say, I must tell you something that happened to me once. And not very long ago, we were in Denmark, and I said, we must go to Aarhus and find this hotel. This time we traipsed all around the town. I couldn't find the hotel. It was raining. We went into another hotel and I ordered cream, and it was just as messy as you get over here. The whole thing was a kind of dream cream, and I finished up with everybody saying, you know, well, Daddy, well, where is it? I said, well, shut up, you know. And finished up very angry and fed up and disillusioned and sullen. And that is my memory of that town. It's the first quotation that's ever fitted something that's really happened to me. As how I remember it is either Aarhus sick or Aarhus sullen.
And now we go back to Frank Muir. And if you remember, his quotation was, it takes a great deal of history to produce a little literature.
My story is a birthday present for my wife. At least it's to produce a birthday present for my wife. You see, what my wife, I know, would really like for her birthday is, belongs to a neighbour of ours. It's a not a very valuable thing, but a very attractive thing. She likes it very much. It's a small, antique French milk jug. I don't think it's worth very much, so I went along to this chap and asked him if I could buy it. And he started talking about my word. And he, you know, he said, do you make those stories up at the end? I don't believe it, I think you copy them. I said, no, we don't. And he said, tell you what, could you make up a story about anything? So I said, well, you either make it up or it's something that's happened to us. So he said, could you make up a story about an ear? So I said, yes, if you'll give me that antique French milk jug. So he said, all right, he said, next programme, if you'll tell a story for 5 minutes about an ear, you can have that. So this is what I've now got to try and do. But it's funny about ears, because it isn't often that one gets a chance of telling a story that actually happened to one. And I can tonight, because about 3 weeks ago, something happened to my ear. My right ear started growing. It grew twice the size of the left one. It's a rather odd thing to happen, actually. Almost bizarre. It was a Thursday that I noticed it. It was about midnight. I got up and had and shaved. I think our bedroom clock gains a bit. I'm very well organized with my shaving, so there could be no possibility of mistake about this. Actually, I have a light shrouded immediately in front of me, a sort of table lamp with a deep hood. And on the left-hand side, I have a little round mirror. On the right-hand side, I have a little round mirror. My face is then beautifully lit, and I can shave first the left hand, then the right hand. And while I was shaving, I suddenly noticed that my right ear was twice the size of the left. Now, this was a terrible shock. I really went into a kind of decline. It worried me, because to try and take in quite the importance of what had happened, I suddenly realised how difficult this was going to make life. I don't at the moment wear spectacles. I'm young enough not to mind bumping into things. But there will come a day when I shall have to wear spectacles, and they will be biased. They will slope either from left to right or right to left. I could, of course, wear two monocles. Another thing is people started looking at me. They were staring at me in the street. I noticed them staring at me about the same time as I developed this technique of walking sideways. Left ear leading and right ear trailing. So that they wouldn't see it, you see. But they were. They stared at me. They still stared at me. And the next morning, when I shaved, my ear had gone back to normal. Quite extraordinary. Just like that, my ear was its normal size. really was the most extraordinary, curious business. A couple of days afterwards, my wife was talking to me. She said, by the way, one thing I meant to tell you, did you know that your... those two mirrors. I didn't realise that they're those double mirrors because I knocked one down and I must have put the right one back the wrong way. And the other side is a magnifying glass. But I've turned it round the right way now, you see. Very strange. I didn't pay much attention to it. That's the story of my large ear. And I've won my bet and I can now produce, if this man pays up, I can now produce the birthday present I wanted to give my wife, this small antique French milk jug. It's very nice, actually. I've seen it. It's a sort of a biscuit-coloured jar. It is antique, and I know it's French, because it's got the French for dairy on it in rather speckly gold letters. Laiterie. Yeah. I'm sorry the story is so long, but I had to keep it going for 5 minutes. It seems a rather intolerable time, but that's life, as Henry James once said. It takes a great deal of ear story to produce a little latery jar.
Well, by a very, very narrow margin, from your applause, Frank Muir wins the contest of stories. And that brings us to a final score in which Dilys Powell and Frank Muir win by 2 marks from Nancy Spain and Dennis Norden. And this also brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dilys Powell, Nancy Spain, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Shryan and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC. ¶¶